Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli. I'm here with Frank Vandenhorst and Peter M. Fellows. In this week's book talk segment, we're each going to talk about a different book or the same book, one show, three books, or two books, all under 30 minutes. Peter, which book will you be sharing with us today?
Okay, I've got a powerful and transformative book to share, Rick. And let me begin by saying, though, it's great to be here again with you and Frank at the Road Ahead Cafe. I always look forward to this show because I never know what you guys are going to come up with. And hello again to what must be the most intelligent audience in the podcast universe, since you're choosing to be here with us. But if you really love us, remember, subscribe to this podcast, tell a friend, and then, I don't know, give us a five-star review or some kind words about how whenever you put our podcast on, you notice that the plants in the house seem to get greener or something like that. Anyway, it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when my choice of book for today occurred to me. I climbed up to the top of my bookshelf and brought down a copy of a book I discovered in 1980. During a pivotal moment in my life, the message in this book saved me from pulling a Dumb and Dumber in front of my new girlfriend. And if not for that, I might have become a bottle in a bag type guy living in a renovated dumpster, and I never would have met Rick and Frank and started this podcast where, ironically, I make Dumb and Dumber look smarter and smarter every time I talk. The book I'm talking about is The Inner Game of Tennis by Timothy Galway. I don't know if you play tennis. I don't play tennis. But this book teaches you how to apply the inner game to any aspect of your life. And it's very much in sync with my own form of mindfulness, mindful pathfinding. So don't leave the room for a bathroom break, because you might be okay if you miss out on my life-transforming book talk, but your day will be poorer if you miss out on what Frank and Rick have to tell you. Back to you, Rick.
Thank you, Peter. Good stuff. So funny. Frank, what about you? Which book have you got to share today?
Well, to the audience, you will be happy because I'm going to share the same book as Peter has chosen. So that's interesting. But I'm going to look at, I'm going to discuss it from a different angle, I think, than Peter will. Peter will connect it to his famous, by now, well-known mindful pathfinder. Yes, mindful, your universal compass, something like that. So this is an interesting book. I played tennis, but I was not a good tennis player at all. But anyway, I played it. I've done it. I love the game until I got some problem with my knee. And that's, that's a game changer, actually. So I'm going to talk about the inner tennis, the inner game, from the angle of flow and Kaizen. Might be interesting.
Will be. It will be.
Wow. Yes. Good stuff, Frank. I love that you're both using that same book. So I'm going to talk about Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. It just happens to be the 75th anniversary this year of publishing of that book. It came out in 1946. It's 2021, 75 years. It's 580 pages, but it goes like that. This book, I have a backstory, which I'll elaborate on. In 1992, I met a young lady, oddly enough, in a networking event, which was filled with business people. It was called The Grapevine. But as we were going around talking about who we are, she said, "I'm a rebirther and a polarity therapist." So it was a room full of business people. I made a beeline to her. I started to work with her. This was one of the books that she shared with me during our work together. And I can't wait to dig in deeper and tell you more about it. But right now, Peter, let's get into your in-depth talk about your book.
Thanks, Rick. It was August 1980. I was stepping up to a batting plate, 25 years old, skinny as a rake, long hair. Yeah, I had hair, honest. I took my stance with the bat in my first ever slow pitch softball game, and I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. why did I sign up for a sport that I didn't know how to play? Well, have you ever had a situation where you were asked to do something that you know you can't do or you don't want to do, but you're too embarrassed to say no, so you say yes? That's why I joined. And from the moment I agreed to play, my inner voice tormented me. You've never played any kind of baseball. You don't even know how to hit a ball. You can't throw. Everyone on your team's going to hate you for making them lose. And if that wasn't bad enough, my new girlfriend, brand new girlfriend, she was flying across the country to visit me, was going to be in the stands watching. So to get my inner voice to shut down for a while, I decided to distract it by browsing through the shelves of a bookstore. And that's where I found Timothy Galway's book, The Inner Game of Tennis. Galway said that we have two selves. Self one is the teller. It's the part of you who chooses what to do. Self two is the doer. It's the part of you who figures out how to do the activity. Problems happen when self one teller gets nervous. It starts trying to micromanage everything and it gets in the way of what is essentially an unconscious process on the part of self two. So this is Galway's solution. Tell self two, the non-conscious mind, what you want to do by visualizing it, not verbally, by visualizing it. And then distract self one so that it can't interfere with what the non-conscious mind is doing. So here I am up to bat, my new girlfriend watching, my team watching. See, it feels like everyone is watching. My inner voice is giving me detailed instructions about what to do, how to stand, how to hold the bat. Oh yeah, and also gives me this gem of advice. Your girlfriend's watching, don't blow it. So of course, with that thought in mind, I promptly blew it by striking out. And then I remembered what Galway was teaching in his book, The Inner Game of Tennis. Self two, what in mindful pathfinding I call your pathfinder, knows what to do. It's seen others hit successfully. I don't need to do anything else other than distract self one so self two can focus on learning with the body how to hit that ball. So how could I distract self one? I gave him a job to do. I told him, you got to relax. Recite the affirmations from this meditation cycle I'd written a while before. Red, I'm physically relaxed. Orange, my emotions are calm. Yellow, my mind is clear. Green, my body is healthy. Blue, I feel love for everyone. Purple, my intuition is flowing. Violet, I feel connected with everything. And as my inner voice recited the affirmation about how I feel connected with everything, I really did begin to feel that way. I saw the crowd and the players and the pitcher, not as individual things, components, but as one connected whole. It was like the action of any individual was choreographed part of the movement of the whole group. Weird, right? I couldn't quite define it, and it so intrigued my inner voice that he was aware of the pitcher pitching and the ball coming towards me. And all that just seemed to be part of the whole group movement. And the ball was coming, and my body knew when and how to move so that it could hit it. And I noticed my body swing the bat, and the bat connect to the ball, and the ball goes soaring up and out of the field. So I ran to the bases without any fear or worry, because that's what I was doing as part of this whole. Now, if this had been a movie, having discovered this marvelous technique of how to sync self one and self two, I would have become the Zen master of slow pitch. But it wasn't a movie. And I felt while I was in the magical state of flow, right up to the moment, people started complimenting me. Man, if you keep improving at this rate, you'll be able to go pro. And suddenly I drop out of that magical state, that flow. My inner voice goes, uh-oh, what's going to happen next time you're up? You might not do as well. You might destroy the illusion. Fear is always the future. Now look what you've done. They're going to expect home runs every time you're up. You're going to disappoint them. You would have been safer to being a mediocre player. Nobody would have minded. Everybody would have been happy. And with that goal in mind, for the rest of the series, I was a mediocre player. But one thing Galway didn't teach me, what I discovered, is that self two, what I call your pathfinder, is not neutral. It doesn't care about the specific goals your brain creates. Self two only cares about maximizing fulfillment in anything you set out to do, even if that means getting you a different outcome than you expected. So while in 1980, I didn't get to go pro in slow pitch. Can you go pro in slow pitch? I don't know. Pathfinder did surprise me with a much more fulfilling outcome. I got the girl, 1980. She married me, foolish girl, and still happily married today. The Inner Game of Tennis is an empowering book for everyone because you can apply the approach to any aspect of your life. And even if you're already using mindful pathfinding, read The Inner Game of Tennis. Each of us is unique, and Galway's model might help you understand things even better. As always, if you want to know more about what I'm doing, come visit me at mindfulpathfinding.com. Back to you, Rick.
Terrific story. What a great cover, too. I love that. I love the fashion you guys were sharing. Wow. Frank, tell us more, please. I'm riveted.
Yeah, great story, Peter, especially about your wife and still happy. Well, that's wonderful. Just have a look at it from a different angle. You just mentioned one thing, and actually you could grasp it like flow, being in flow. Something happens. You're in the mood. It goes naturally. Actually, what's happening when you're in flow, it's a balance between your skills and your challenge. If they are in balance, then your skill matches your challenge. So you actually perform at the most best level you can perform on. So actually yourself number two is doing his or her thing. You stay out of the way. And the moment you start interfering with that, just what Peter says, then your egoic self or your mind starts to kick in. And interesting is, if you see, you go to the tennis court, look, for example, at Wimbledon or the US Open or whatever, then you see what happens. Those tennisers start to talk to each other. And you know you're going to win the game when the other person is going to, in a mode of self-blaming. Yeah, he's going, okay, this one straight, this one just top spin, and start to talk about what's going to happen. Then you know that self number one is trying to interfere with self number two. So what happens? You're out of flow. So in a way, to win a game is to do it in such a way that you get the other person out of balance. But doing that, your own ego self is start to kick in. So will it be a good game? Probably not. What's interesting is, if you want to move forward, if you look at the flow concept, then you say, I want to learn more, I want to improve my tennis playing or whatever you're focusing on, then you actually going to tweak your challenge a bit. Challenge, take a next step, but take it in such a way that self number two is not disrupted. And the interesting thing is, there is another technique which is called Kaizen. Kaizen is from the China in Japanese saying. It's actually a word. It's called improvement. And Kai means change, and Zen means good. So it's a change for good. And a guy called Dr. Robert Mauer wrote an interesting book about it. One small step can change your life. An interesting book to read, because it is actually linked to that inner tennis, to that inner self-talk. So how can you improve? How can you make your next step? He says, well, there are three things you can use. And I will have a special session about this wonderful book and about Kaizen, but just give you a tidbit. Number one, the art of making great and lasting changes comes through small, steady steps. That means that you don't jump into conclusions or say, oh, something like that, I have to do this or I have to do that. No, no, no. Small, steady steps. That's one. Two, Kaizen circumvents the brain's built-in resistance to behaviors. Because your brain doesn't like sudden change. It has a mode. It's called the flight or fight modus. So if it is not successful, it either go fighting, and you see that people, their facial expression get really, stressed. You know, they want to hit the ball, and you see what happens. Or you see they already give up and say, okay, I lost this game. Yeah. So that's interesting to look at. See how it works for yourself in your life. When does this flight mode kick in? And when does the fight mode kick in relation, of course, to the flow experience we're just talking about? And the third aspect is small rewards lead to big returns. So feedback, in that sense of steps that makes you successful, it works. And what just Peter said in his example was a wonderful example of that. And you see that the small steps work perfectly. So to summarize it, three steps. One, the art of making great and lasting changes come from small, steady steps. Two, Kaizen circumvents the brain built-in resistance to new behaviors. Just small steps again. And number three, small rewards lead to big returns. If you do this and you practice it in such a way, you will actually boost your flow experience and start to trust self number two. Rick, what do you think?
Good stuff, Frank. Wow. You guys are bringing it, putting the pressure on me here, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to take out my heavy artillery notes now.
Yeah. You can bring it. You can bring it.
So, you know, I think that this was such a fateful event, you know, me finding this book, because I was at the time a young salesperson. I'm very much about material and practicality. I have a young wife. And I'm, you know, trying to build my life. I'm trying to achieve and accumulate. And I'm in a networking meeting and I'm there to do business and be transactional. And I meet this rebirther and polarity therapist. So it starts this journey, which I know I wanted more of. I wanted to be balanced. I wanted to do things that were, you know, more spiritual and more mindful, but I was rooted in this selling, closing, you know, the shark, top salesman, all this stuff. So she gave me a lot of things to read and a lot of things to think about, but she gives me this book, Autobiography of a Yogi. And it wasn't this copy, by the way. This is a newer copy I just got because I wanted to have the one with the 75th anniversary on it from the Self-Realization Fellowship. So still supporting the cause of Paramahansa Yogananda. But I start reading this stuff and I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, what is all of this yogi stuff and, you know, all of these ancient traditions and this knowledge? And something really just felt calming and peaceful and centering for me. So as a young person, let's see, at the time I was about 25 years old, I needed this kind of thing. I needed to be, you know, more grounded. I was just, you know, way too, you know, into the sales mode. So anyway, I'm reading this story and there were a lot of parallels between, you know, what this, you know, master did in bringing yoga to the United States, which was, you know, something that was never done before. So at a young age, Paramahansa's mother said that she had a vision, saw that he was a chosen son, a bright light, very similar to my own journey. I was the third born in my family. And when I was born, my mother and father said something similar. They felt like I was like a bright light that came to the family at a challenging time. The stories of his study and personal discipline, mentoring and belief, watching miracles happen. My mentor, Belinda, who I spoke of earlier, she used to use the word Babaji, which was kind of like this, you know, the higher God, and the mentor of Paramahansa. And you follow this magnificent journey from ancient India and his teachings to the United States with yoga, all about releasing the ego, unity with the spirit, a path any one of us can follow. So I thought it was magical to bring this book up, especially at this time for the 75th history. There's a quote in this book, "The iron filings of karma are only attracted where a magnet of personal ego still exists." And I just thought that would be something great to share with all of you. And think about that. The iron filings of karma are only attracted where a magnet of personal ego still exists. So if I think back to that, this was a turning point in my life on many levels. I studied with Belinda for about 7 years. I learned a lot about the systems aimed at the permanent removal of suffering, attainment of bliss. And so I found seven or eight steps that I wanted to share as kind of a teaching. It's called the yoga system of the Patanjali, the Eightfold Path. So one is yama, moral conduct. Two, niyama, spiritual observances. Three, asana, the right posture for your meditation. Four, pranayama, control of the subtle life currents, something I'm very interested in. Five, pratyahara, withdrawal of the senses from external objects. Six, dharana, concentration. Seven, dhyana, meditation. And eight, samadhi, super conscious experience, was the final goal in this absoluteness in which the yogi realizes the truth beyond all intellectual apprehension. So I wanted to drop that on you all. After 32 years in the West, Paramahansa Yogananda initiated more than 100,000 students into yoga. He went to the White House in 1927 with Calvin Coolidge. He had an international congress in Boston for the first time. It was the first time a president had ever met with a yogi. His mentor actually said that he was his own son. A weight was lifted. He had pleased his master. And I have this quote here: go from physical senses to consciousness and feelings. In 1952, moment of his earthly passing, there's a story that while he was observed through a glass top casket from March 7th through March 27th, there were no visible signs of decay and no odor or signs of death. He just seems to be in a permanent state of immutability, said the folks in the embalming area. So Paramahansa Yogananda had achieved a level of life and education that was just profound. So I urge you all to grab this book and read it. It could change your life. It definitely did mine. Peter, back to you for final thoughts.
It's pretty heavy, Rick. Heavy stuff. I just say that no matter what challenge you're facing at the deeper level of your pathfinder or self too, you know the most fulfilling path forward for you. And the only thing between you and being back in the flow, as Frank would say, or on the path, is the interference of your brain, the inner voice, the self one, the ego, as Frank says. When it feels threatened, it can't bring itself to trust in the innate wisdom of your pathfinder self too, but you can help it. Timothy Galway gives you one way of helping it. Mindful pathfinding gives you yet another. Options are good because nobody knows you like your deeper self. Back to you, Rick.
Thank you, Peter. Great stuff. Frank, want to wrap it up for us?
Yes. Yogananda also wrote another book. It's called Affirmations. And maybe we can have a look at it at another moment when we start discussing books again, because there are some very interesting, very applicable thoughts about how to make affirmations and what effect that has on you and on your whole system and your environment and so on. So I really enjoyed listening to you, Rick. To sum it up, I think if you look at your inner game, if you look at the flow, the way you feel that you're in the zone, or how you, whatever you call it, when things just happen without any effort, you can tremendously be sustained by three aspects, which you could borrow from the Kaizen methodology. I will summarize them. Take small steps. Take small steps. Think small thoughts and trust yourself. Trust yourself. I think that's the most important thing. Know that there is always an answer to all your questions you have. And as I always say, what you think about and think about, you bring about. Thank you very much for watching and listening.
Good stuff, Frank. Thank you. So my final thought on this is, you never know where your greatest mentor and teacher is going to come from. It could be in the most unlikely place. And that book that you thought you never would read, read it and see what comes for you, because the universe is always working in your favor. Thank you for joining us today on the Road Ahead Cafe. Remember, good people share good things with friends. So don't be shy. Let those you care about know about your trend-setting discovery of the Road Ahead Cafe. We look forward to getting together with you next week. Savor the day. See you soon.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.